am for me, okay. Today on the stream, we are going to be looking at the impact that our changing climate is having on our health. If you're on YouTube right now, be part of the conversation. The comment section is right here. It is live. If you've experienced climate change-related health conditions, please share them with us. Be part of today's show.
Widespread scientific consensus tells us the world's climate is changing. These changes are creating new health risks in communities across the United States. Extreme weather, unhealthy air quality, and disease outbreaks are becoming more frequent and more severe, affecting more people in more places.
So that video was produced by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in the United States. It was aimed at communities so that they knew what climate change may well do regarding health and how they can prepare for that changing health in communities. So we are going to do exactly that on today's show with the assistance of Maria, Marina and Emmeline. So good to have you all with us. Maria, welcome to the stream. Please introduce yourself to our global audience.
Hi, I am Maria Neira, the Director of the Department of Environment, Climate Change and Health at the World Health Organization in Geneva.
So good to have you.
Very happy to be with you.
Oh, we are very happy. We're delighted to have you here on the stream. Marina, please introduce yourself to our viewers around the world.
Hi, everyone. I'm Marina Romanello. I'm the Executive Director for the Lancet Countdown on Health and Climate Change, which is a research collaboration looking at the interconnections between health and climate change. It's lovely to be here.
Good to have you. And Emmeline, welcome to the stream. Please introduce yourself to our audience. Tell them who you are and what you do.
Thank you so much for having me. My name is Emmeline Laney. I'm a fourth-year medical student at Emory University in Atlanta, and I've been working with an incredible team trying to bring climate change and environmental health curriculum to our medical school.
I am going to start with just making that very direct connection between climate change and health conditions. Emmeline, give us one example straight away so our audience go, oh, okay, I get it now. Go ahead.
Climate change, heat, and heat illness.
All right. Marina.
I will extend what has just been said and say it's also about the how extreme heat and our exposure to extreme weather also undermines our capacity to do labor outdoors, to do exercise, and to carry out our normal lives. That also undermines our health.
Maria.
I think I will go for the image you have behind you with the lungs. I think the bad quality of the air we are breathing today is very much connected to the causes of climate change and the causes of air pollution. So bringing the image of the lungs to the issue of climate change, I think it changed completely the narrative we have been using until now, and I think it's very important.
Mm-hmm. I am going to scroll through some of the other conditions that can well apply to climate change and our global health. Injury and mortality from extreme weather events. We've seen that with flooding in Northern Europe. Heat-related illnesses, I've guess already mentioned that. Respiratory illnesses. This is what Maria was talking about. Do you remember those huge fires that we saw in Australia not so long ago? Also on the west coast of the US. Waterborne diseases and other water-related health impacts that will connect to extreme flooding, more regular flooding. Zoonosis. We all know about this right now. We're in a COVID pandemic right now, so you know about that connection between bats and humans and COVID-19, vector-borne diseases. This is a huge list. Have I scared you yet, audience? Malnutrition and food-borne diseases, non-communicable diseases, mental and psychosocial health. This is a huge area, Maria. When we are looking at climate change, is anyone looking at this apart from the very specialized little bubbles? Are we thinking about this as countries, as regions, realizing that our health and our health systems need to be prepared?
Yes, this is a very good point, because in WHO, this is what we have been trying to do for a long time, making sure that everybody understands the connection with our health. And the connection is very clear. If we keep burning fossil fuels as we are doing now, not only we are elevating creating global warming, but we are as well creating air pollution. And that air pollution is killing us, is killing 7 million people every single year. 7 million people that is losing their life because of exposure to air pollution. They have asthma, they have chronic respiratory diseases, they have lung cancer, they have obviously a stroke and ischemic heart diseases. And this is happening in most of the big cities. And according to our studies, 90% of the people around the world is breathing air now that is toxic and is not contributing to our health, at the contrary. In addition, you saw this little mosquito that you have on your graphic. Mm. That little mosquito will transmit diseases like malaria or dengue. Well, this lovely mosquito is now reproducing himself very well, or herself, because it's a female, the one transmitting malaria, in places where we didn't see it before, in Kenya, for instance, in some high-level places. And now we see it because of the global warming, or dengue in some places in Asia. I can give you plenty of examples of diseases that we didn't see it before. And because of the global warming, we see it. And people displaced in Bangladesh, they need to move because the ocean is coming. So I think we can give plenty of examples that for people to understand that this is very close to them. And it's not an issue for the next generations, you know, and just to saving the planet and the polar bears. This is about saving our health right now, saving ourselves right now, our economy, our society, and making sure that we put the basis for a minimum quality of life.
Marina. Yeah, and I agree with Maria, and I would say there's also something very interesting in that slide that you presented, that it shows just the extent of the interference of climate change with our health, undermining our food security, our water security, as Maria said, the air that we breathe, transmission of infectious diseases. But what's really interesting is that all of those impacts of climate change are being felt in every place of the world. There's really no geography that remains untouched from climate change risks. And the interesting thing is that these hazards don't happen separated. These exposures to this climate risk don't happen isolated, but happen one over the other. And you've seen in the U.S. and in Canada a horrendous example of that last summer, when you had these extreme heat wave records of temperature that we'd never seen before, followed by the extreme wildfires, and followed then by a huge flood that was in part facilitated because of the erosion of the wildfire. So all of those impacts of climate change, adding one on top of the other. And as Maria said, the WHO has done a phenomenal job in trying to build awareness and in helping health systems prepare to be able to cope with those increased health risks and that increased burden, really, to our health of climate change in all geographies.
Emmeline, how's your work going to help us understand this better? Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for that. And I think the two of them, I mean, we've all highlighted how health or climate change impacts every aspect of health. And so we've realized, myself and my peers that are health professionals and future health professionals, we are walking into a reality where our clinical practice is undoubtedly going to be affected and is already affected by what's going on. And so how do we prepare a climate-ready healthcare workforce? Mm. And education is a super important part of that. And so at Emory, we've been trying to find a way that we can integrate that into our curriculum. And that's been a really big privilege to be part of, and how we've been able to make that a reality.
Mm-hmm. What does that look like, getting that knowledge about climate change and health into the curriculum? What would I see now that I wouldn't have seen 10 years ago?
Very much so. So again, I think it goes back to the point and knowing that climate change impacts every organ system in the body, the heart, the lungs, the brain. As we've already talked about, it has implications on our patients' ability to access care, as well as our system, our healthcare system, ability to deliver care. And we know that that's not felt equally among those who are most vulnerable in our community. So just as you said, Femi, how do we bring that into our curriculum, something that's so broad and pervasive? The way that we've approached that is that this can't be distilled down into an elective or a lecture, but rather our approach has been recontextualizing what it is we already need to learn, what we have to know as a medical student, as it relates to climate change and health. To give you an example, our curriculum with an emphasis on the preclinical phase, which is learning how the body works and what happens when things go wrong, is examining it through a climate lens. So for our course on the cardiology, when we learn about the heart, we have to zoom in and look at how heart disease developed from our vessels that impact our heart that can lead to heart attacks or heart failure. And we basically look at what we already need to know through the lens of climate and the way that heat might increase that risk or the way air pollution may increase that risk. Air pollution also affects our lungs, just as Maria said. So for us, when we learn about asthma, what does that look like? And of course, it involves us learning about the physiology about the lungs, but also has implications in the way as students we learn to take a thorough medical history, examining the risk factors that our patients are exposed to, be it by virtue of the work that they do, if they live close to an airway. Sorry, please yes. Go for it.
No, no, I just wanted that. It's such a pleasure to hear you because we need so strongly the voice of the medical students, the health professionals, and for people to understand that this is a very serious public health issue as well. And, you know, I used to be a medical student myself a little bit long time ago, but they prepare us at the medical schools. They prepare us to treat patients, you know, to cure diseases, to offer the best of the technology and the knowledge to once you have developed a disease, I will treat you. And today, if we need the health professionals' voices in this agenda of climate change, is because climate change and air pollution are touching the pillars of our health. Mm-hmm. Access to safe food, clean air, safe water, and shelter. And we are altering all of that. If we don't produce food because we have a flooding, if we have a toxic air that will come into our lungs and from our lungs go into the bloodstream and all of this, nobody can say it that this is not an issue for health professionals. Right. This is our business, very, very much. So it has to be incorporated, and we need the voice of the health professionals in asthma. You cannot just keep treating asthma. You need to understand why this person is having asthma, and it's because they live on very, very polluted cities in most of the cases.
All right, guests. So I have so many video comments that I want to run by you. So I'm going to do that for the next section of our conversation. This is Tyler. And Tyler makes some really interesting points about air pollution and what we need to do with the information and how we collect that information. Marina, I want you to listen to Tyler and immediately respond off the back of his video. Here he is.
We know that air pollution exposure is responsible for an incredible amount of avoidable deaths around the world. In fact, a Harvard study recently put that number at 8 million avoidable deaths globally. With the right information at the right time, we can help not only individuals reduce their own exposure, but also researchers and policymakers to be able to advance our understanding of the problem, but also to make changes to policy frameworks, reducing exposure thresholds, for example. Now, one of the biggest challenges that we face in this work in to create this type of information is getting the data that we need. Data sources around the world are often limited to the places with the cleanest air. So how do we fill those gaps?
That's such an interesting comment. It's true that we have big data gaps in knowing the extent of the damage of air pollution because not many places monitor very well air pollution. But I will go back perhaps, and this is a nice link with the previous conversation we were just having about the role of the medical professionals. We know what the sources of air pollution are, and by knowing the sources of emission and how they're being used, how we burn fossil fuels and other activities that are related to climate change and to air pollution, we know roughly what our exposure might be, and we know what to do about that. And that is where the health professionals become so crucially important, not only in treating the patients and addressing the cause, but also in ensuring that when we respond to climate change, we do it in a way that takes into account the potential health benefits and maximizes those health benefits of our response. Mm-hmm. So embedding the medical professionals in things like urban redesign. How are we going to reinvent our cities to be sustainable green cities in the face of the climate crisis? And ensuring that the medical professionals are embedded will ensure that we minimize air pollution and therefore deliver better health for everyone. But they have to really be embedded across all of the domains of climate action and the restructuring of our society.
See, Maria, I was thinking earlier as I was chatting to my team, could there be any benefit, any opportunities from our climate changing and the impact it's having on our health? When I initially did that scroll, it was all terrible things that were happening to us around the world. So this is Andy. Andy is from a professor of environmental change and public health at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. I feel like he's accentuating the positive, if there is one. Have a listen to him and then respond.
The World Health Organization sees climate change as the biggest threat to human health. And that's because it has implications for human health through such a wide range of pathways. But there's also another side to that picture, and that is that there are great opportunities to improve health as we move towards a more sustainable economy. As we stop burning fossil fuels, for example, we create less air pollution, which currently kills millions of people. As we move towards consuming more sustainable diets, more fruit, vegetables, less red meat, that can also be highly beneficial to our health. So put all that together, there's a potential to prevent millions of premature deaths and also reduce the risks of dangerous climate change.
Well, this is exactly the point. And this is why at Glasgow, at the COP26, we took as WHO, together with millions and millions of the health professionals, what we call it the health argument for more climate action. Because in fact, we know that until now, people has been terrified by what we were saying about climate change and how this will be affecting your life and how terrible it will be. But we need to present it the other way around. If you tackle the causes of climate change, if you reduce and you go for a transition to renewable sources of energy, clean sources of energy, instead of keeping burning fossil fuels, which are generating this pollution, you could reduce all of these deaths caused by air pollution. You can reduce the fact that in many cities around the world, the pictures you were showing before of a very, very polluted and full of traffic city around the world. It can be Mexico City. It could be New Delhi. It could be in South Africa. It could be not London because it doesn't look like, but it could be any place around the world because today we are all breathing quite toxic air. And what we can obtain for our health if we reduce that air pollution will be amazing. We will be more active lifestyle. We will have more active lifestyle and therefore reduce all of those chronic non-communicable diseases. We will be able to interact socially and reduce all the mental health problems. We will be able to connect on a different way. And our cities will be places where we can breathe instead of having all of these diseases associated with exposure to air pollution. The benefits will be enormous, and I agree that we need to pass our messages in positive, because if we go positive with our messages, we will motivate people to engage and to do more, to stop, using the private car instead of taking a sustainable transport, a public sustainable transport, or using a bicycle, or walking, or recycling, or so many things that we can do, and particularly putting pressure on our politicians for them to do these three transitions very quickly. The transition to sustainable sources of energy, clean sources of energy, the transition to sustainable cities and more livable and sustainable, and the transition to a sustainable food system.
So on YouTube, I feel like I'm at a rally, Maria. Thank you. You've got me fired up now. On YouTube, this is Stella Doro. We need concrete, actionable measures of land management with acknowledgement for funding for health support, not just studies. I don't think that's a dig at you, Emmeline, but I think that's really a what are we actually doing about this? You have the information, you have the data. I also think that Samantha Ardoch, who spoke to us a little bit earlier, was talking about what the medical profession could be doing to help more. Have a listen to Samantha, Emmeline, and then react off the back. Here we go.
Medicine is always changing, it's always evolving, and it takes years to change medical education. And climate change is a new variable that we now have to consider in our management of patients. Healthcare is also a significant contributor to the problem of climate change. We emit about 8.5% of global greenhouse gas emissions. So not only do we have to incorporate climate change into our medical education, we also need to adjust our practices so that we're not contributing to the problem.
Thank you so much for sharing that, and Samantha, for that video. There are a couple of really important parts, one about the value of medical education, and there was also a comment about the time to change medical education, and ultimately recognizing the role that the healthcare profession or healthcare sector has, and in fact, contributing to the problem, that is the fact that we are another large source of greenhouse gas emissions. What I think has been really exciting and certainly meaningful for us at Emory and within our approach of the curricular process and framework at Emory is that our process, the way by which we are integrating climate and environmental health content into our curriculum, is done collaboratively. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean that the faculty and the students are working together. They are creating together that which the faculty teaches, as well as that which the student learns. And that partnership is so invaluable for a variety of reasons. One, it's building the relationships between faculty and students and faculty and faculty. It shows that we are all in this together and that we are all learning together, and that it's not necessarily about being a climate and health expert. While that's so important, and we hope that that is a byproduct of our curriculum, it is hopefully going to show that understanding climate impacts on health is part of the everyday knowledge
I'm only going to interrupt you because I have a but, right? And it's a huge, sure. I was going to say, it's a huge but, double entendre, not meant there. I want to bring in Carly. Because Carly...
Oh, wonderful.
Okay, and you know Carly. Carly had an experience that she felt was very relevant to this conversation, because you are telling us how you need to work as a medical profession, as students, to really acknowledge climate change and its impact on health. And then this is a little story that Carly told us earlier. Here she is.
Back when I started medical school in the fall of 2018, the deadly and destructive campfire was raging through the nearby town of Paradise, California. And at the same time as that awful wildfire, we were ironically in our pulmonary block, our lung block in medical school. Yet despite the fact that we were walking to school every day in N95 masks through an eerie desk, breathing in some of the worst quality air in the world, there was no mention of the health effects of air pollution or wildfire smoke once in our curriculum. And it felt like a real missed opportunity. What was going on inside the classroom felt entirely disconnected from the realities of the outside world.
So I'm just going to leave that there. It's just a contrast from what Emmeline was talking about and then what Carly experienced. Marina, in the last 1 minute of our show, what is the most important message we need to leave for our audience? They're now very aware of that connection between climate change and global health. Last line goes to you.
Look, action, both governmental action and individual action for tackling climate change can be enormously beneficial for health. It can lead not only to avoiding the worst health impacts of climate change, but also it could deliver cleaner air. We talked a lot about air pollution. It would mean transitioning to healthier, greener diets. It would mean active forms of travel. And it would mean cities that are designed around people that encourage social interaction, mental well-being, physical well-being. So there's a win-win situation that you rarely get in real life. And we have this unique opportunity, and we really need to act now, because we are in a pivotal moment as we exit the COVID pandemic and we're trying all to go back to normal to reactivate our economies. We're in a very, very unique moment. And this is the moment to reinvent the way we behave and transition towards finally a healthy and sustainable lifestyle.
Okay. Maria, Marina, Emmeline, thank you so much for helping us understand that connection between climate changing and global health and the impacts that we're all feeling around the world. Really appreciate your input on today's show. Thank you for the comments and questions, and for the video comments and questions as well. I will see you next time. Take care, everybody.